You said you didn't want to read any long poems, but The Weight of Silence on page 45, mm-hmm. which is a long poem in that it goes many pages, but there's, you know, there's not as many lines.
You want me to read it?
I'd love if you could read it.
Okay. Let's see how I do. The Weight of Silence, 1. When I was 8, the world was neither round nor flat. Its borders beginning at Taylor ended on Ash Hill near the cemetery where white folks were buried. We lived in the center on Kennerly Avenue in the last railroad house mid-block on the steepest stretch of the street. At the bottom of the hill, the whites' only school stayed safe behind a wrought iron fence. When we went sledding down the hill, I came home with ash gravel stuck to my knees from falling. Mama would say, "Don't disturb the dead." 2. Mama muttered about the dead the way my mother muttered about food rationing stamps, both worrying how much the war would take. I eavesdropped from my perch under the table, oak with a support crossbeam where I sat spying on the women's conversations. In winter, the pot-bellied stove was kept hot. By spring, the ashes had been cleared and dumped in the pit behind the house where they stayed until the truck from the city picked them up. Already it was June, and the ashes had cooled into crystals that crackled when Bumpsy threw rocks from the garage roof. 3. I was 8 that June, 4 years before Aunt Ethel's son got his degree in dentistry on account of his bum leg that kept him home from the war, and 2 years before Uncle Brother mustered out of the service for unruly behavior. I was 8 when Sadie's mama moved in downstairs with 2 kids and a piano, a wire-thin woman who wore lace collars, her husband, she said, missing in the Pacific. I waited months to hear her play that piano, something airy, leaving the keys tinkling like bells, but always the stairwell was filled with silence. 4. By June, Bumpsy and Priscilla, we called her Pussy, whistled me down the stairs into all-day games of hopscotch and jacks and songs about smallpox and witches and highwaymen. Sadie was 4, thin, light-skinned, like her mama, and the boy, almost 2, held tight to her hand, dangled there like a live teddy. We let them play in the hopscotch, chalked permanently on the sidewalk, or with a loose set of jacks lost in the cracks near the stairwell, or by the rope tree we climbed. Then one day Sadie was gone, and her brother, Silent, scrubbed the chalk in circles. 5. We didn't notice Sadie missing until her mother screamed like some dog howling on a full moon. Neighbor women came to their front doors, then crossed the street to quiet Sadie's mother, already bringing pots of wild greens or beans, still simmering in the juice of ham hocks and onions, cornbread yellow as marigolds on a bright summer day. The women sent us looking, but we found nothing. Even when Bumpsy ran out of the cemetery after he heard an owl hooting in daylight. When Papa came home, he called the cops. We waited, but they didn't come until nightfall. Supper, for once, was quiet that evening. 6. Mama, who never talked about the babies she lost, the little ones gone before their first year ended, went searching for a photo of Jesse, a middle child, lost in the flu epidemic when she was nearly 10. My Aunt Jessie would forever be a child, staring into the camera, her diploma in one hand. Mama stared at the photo, a look my mother held at times, not at, but through whatever was in front of her. While Mama held the photo up to the light, my mother started cleaning the table, though she'd already cleaned it twice. "Mama, Jessie's dead and gone," she said. And I thought I heard Mama say, "Not gone from me." 7. I looked at the photo to see some shadow of my mother in Jessie's face. Jessie standing big-eyed in a white blouse and pleated skirt hanging just so, the bow in her hair spread wide as a halo, her smile as hopeful as the diploma she held. I wanted to know how old she was. I wanted to know if she could jump rope or play hopscotch. I wanted to know if she ever smiled. Then Papa said we had to find little Sadie. Papa said we couldn't wait for Peckerwoods to come looking up in our neighborhood for a little colored girl lost who knows where. 8. That night I twisted the green hornet ring I bought with cereal box tops, squeezed it tight to make it glow green in the dark, to bring Sadie back, and maybe Jesse too. The next day, Bumpsy found little Sadie curled up in one of the ash pits, like a squirrel sleeping through winter. The cops came once, and then the undertaker. The house was filled with folks bringing more food and hugging Sadie's mother. They held the funeral in the living room. Aunt Jenny did Sadie's hair, and Papa held up her little brother to kiss her goodbye in her satin bed, hair ribbon stiffly in place. "Sister sleeping," he said, and Papa nodded yes. 6 months later, Papa was dead too. Each of his daughters had a different reason for his death. Stabbed, one said. Shot, said another, a little hole in his chest. Poison from the bad food white folks served. I was told to be quiet. Don't disturb the dead. Aunt Claudia even said just Sadie's mama had brought the shadow of death to our house with her fatherless children. The wind hummed in the pot-bellied stove. The neighbor's dog barked at nothing. All I know is that when I was 8, death came barreling through our neighborhood and took what I remembered most that year.
You're 8 years old, and your memory of the events or the imagery with which you're telling the story is we're experiencing it as if we're there. It's incredible to be able to do that and to not get into anything maudlin or sentimental. It's just, it's mastery is what it is. Mm-hmm. How do you stop the emotion for 9 essentially sonnet length poems? How do you not just collapse into the emotion of having that experience?
Well, you know, for a long time I didn't know why I wrote so many poems about being 8 years old. And then when I started this book, I had to sit down and really go back. You know, something must have happened that was so significant that that year stands out. And of course, there was my grandfather's death, and there was also Sadie. So it became clear that what happened when I was 8 probably shaped the rest of my life.
My dad was, I think, 10 years old when he lost 2 older brothers to diphtheria within 5 weeks of each other. His mom was a single mom in raising these kids on the west side of Chicago, and too proud to take them to the Cook County Hospital for charity care. And my dad and his sister, my Aunt Barbara, both contracted diphtheria, but were taken by my aunt in time. So my dad not only had that grief of that moment of childhood where the innocence is gone or whatever happens, you're marked in such a way that it's going to affect the rest of your life, but also that survivor guilt. Why did they take Melvin and Donald and not me? And I was reading a poem later in the book, and I don't remember what poem it was, but near the end of the book, today on the link and having that experience and relating what happened to your family, to my family, and it was just intense. And that's what poetry at its best can do for us. It can allow us to have an experience or have a sense of experience that we feel very, very deeply in that way. Barry McKinnon said, time is the poet's subject and emotion is the poem's fact. Loaded with facts.
I try to separate sentiment and sentimentality. Mm-hmm. I can't evoke the atmosphere, but the reader brings the emotion.
Well, I see what you're saying.
Yeah, yeah.